All right, good evening, everyone. Everyone has a sheet? Yeah? Oh, there are no more sheets. They're all out on the chairs. Okay, perfect. Okay, they're all on the chairs. Thank you. All right, I apologize about the change of location. Baruch Hashem, tomorrow morning, I included the flyer on the back of your handout. So tomorrow morning, we're having a learning program because of the legal holiday. So there's a minyan at 8 o'clock from 8:45 to 9:30. There's breakfast and source preparation. And then 9:30 to 10:30, a shir on the topic of Pidyon Shvuyim, the halachic ramifications of prisoner exchanges. Obviously, looking at the entire episode of Gilad Shalit, through the prism of halacha, just using the shalit prisoner exchange kind of as a springboard, but analyzing and kind of going through the deeper issues. So you could find that's on this last packet. Yes. Is it? I'm sorry.
Is it going to be recorded?
It depends why you don't make it. If it's about sleeping later, right? No, Emir Tzashan, it will be recorded. It will be recorded. Yes. Yes, although sometimes that website is my worst enemy because everybody could always get it later. But okay, yes, but that's tomorrow morning. And again, the time's not on here, but again, there's a minyan at 8, the breakfast and source preparation from 8:45 to 9:30, and the shir itself will be from 9:30 to 10:30. That's going to be over here in rooms 2 and 3. That's why we're over here tonight. Okay, so let's begin. I'm sorry. Let's begin. Number one, Vayozed Yaakov Nozid Vayavo Esav Min Asada Vehu Ayev. So Yaakov Avinu is making this Nozid, is making this porridge, and Esav comes out from the field and he's tired. Vayomer Esav al Yaakov, Halitini Namina Adoma Adomazeh. So Esav says to Yaakov, please pour me some of this red stuff. Ki Ayev Anochi, I'm exhausted. Al King Krashmo Edom. Therefore, he is called Edom. It's called Edom. Vayomer Yaakov. Yaakov says, no problem. Michra kayom es bechoras chali. You want the porridge, you want the lentils, no problem. Sell me your birthright. Vayomer Esav. Hini anochi holeich lamos v'lama zeli bechora. So Esav says, look, I'm about to die. I'm amish famished. I'm exhausted. If I don't eat something, it's going to be the end. So what do I need this birthright for? Meaning, what good is the birthright if I'm not going to live to enjoy it? Vayomer Yaakov. He shavali kayom. Now, although Esav doesn't say it explicitly, but understood within his statement is the idea that, of course, you could have the birthright. Vayomer Yaakov yishava li kayom. So as Yaakov says, Yaakov doesn't trust him for his word, and therefore says, swear to me today, which means just like it's light outside, so swear to me in such a clear, unequivocal way. Vayishava lo, Esav swears that he sells him the birthright. Vayimkor es bechora sol Yaakov. And he sells his birthright to Yaakov. V'Yaakov noson le'Esav lechem unizid adoshim, and Yaakov Avinu gives to Esav bread and the lentils. Again, interestingly enough, the bread wasn't originally part. Esav didn't ask for the bread, but the bread was put in there as well. Vayochal, vayesht, Esav ate, Esav drank. Vayokom, he got up. Vayelech, he left. Vayivez Esav es habechora. And Esav despised the birthright. Okay. Number two. Fast forward a little bit in the parasha. Now Yaakov Avinu has come to his father and has portrayed himself as Esav. As a result, has received the blessings from Yaakov Avinu. Esav comes back, realizes what happened, says to his father, number two, Kishmoa Esav es divrei aviv. When Esav heard the words of his father, now what words of his father is he referring to? When Esav heard that his father told him, look, your brother was here. Your brother was here. Your brother took the blessings. Vayitzak tzaako gidolo umora ad ma'od. He goes ahead and he lets out, this is such a profound statement, tzaako gidola, a great cry, umora, a bitter cry, ad ma'od. Just interestingly enough, the Gemara Maseches Megillah says, where else do we see this type of phraseology? Tzaako gidolo ma'od. By Mordechai, right? After hearing about the decree of Haman, so Mordechai goes ahead and lets out this also, Tzaka Gidola Umara. And the Gemara actually understands, amazingly enough, that as much as Yaakov may have been justified in his actions, at the end of the day he caused Esav pain. And when you cause someone pain, even if it's warranted, even if you're right, there are repercussions for that. So for causing Esav to utter this Tzaka Gidola Umar, bless you, Yaakov Avinu's descendant, i.e. Mordechai, also utters forth this cry, Vayomer L'Aviv Barchini Gam Ani Avi. And Esav, and here's an amazing shift. Esav, who always gives off this image of bravado, who always gives off this image as being, you know, like the alpha male, almost seems to be begging his father, please father, bless me also. So Yitzchak says, look, your brother came. He came b'mirma, you could translate b'mirma as with deception, or b'mirma can mean with wisdom, and he took your blessing. Vayomer, and Esav responds, Hachi kara shmo Yaakov. Now I know why his name is Yaakov. Vayakveni ze pa'amayim. He has literally pulled the rug out from under me. He's held onto my heel now twice. Es b'chora silakach. Number one, he took my birthright. V'hine ata lakach birchosi. And now he actually took the blessing from me. Vayomer, Yomar halo atzalta li bracha. And once again, Esav begs Yisra, did you not save for me even one little blessing? Now, what's interesting is that when we normally read about this episode, we normally focus our attention on what? On Yaakov Avinu. Right? The fundamental question always comes crashing down on Yaakov. That Yaakov, and of course the irony is Yaakov Avinu is known as MS, he's known by the attribute of truth, and we're always bothered by what appears to be a lack of truth in Yaakov Avinu's dealings with his brother. It almost seems a shtickle extortion, right? His brother says, I'm starving. He says, no problem, give me your birthright, I'll give you a bowl of porridge. And then he actively deceives his father. We're not talking about that tonight. We spoke about that actually 2 years ago, which of course you remember, 2 years ago. It's good to know I can give it next year, I guess. That's all right. So what I'd like to focus on this year, is Esav. And really focusing on Esav is a two-pronged question. Number one, in source number one, what is he thinking when he gives away his birthright for a bowl of lentils? You know, if Esav wants to say the birthright's not for me, look, it's Esav, you could be a little bit of a businessman. If you recognize that there's something you have that you don't want, it's not worth anything to you, but it's worth a lot to someone else, up the ante a little bit. Why is Esav willing to part with his birthright for a simple bowl of lentils? And then the follow-up question, which is, at the end of the day, if he despised the birthright so much, which is what the Torah says at the end of number one, the Torah almost seems to be telling us, why is Esav willing to go ahead and part with his birthright for a bowl of lentils? Because it's not only that it's worthless to him, but he despises it. He hates it. He dislikes it. And so it's almost like the Torah is giving us this image that he is happy to be rid of it. But if that's the case, then how do you understand his behavior in number two? Where after finding out that all Yaakov has done is simply taken that which belongs to him, why does Esav get so upset? And why does Esav now play the role of the victim, essentially telling his father, look, my brother stole the birthright from me. My brother deprived me of this opportunity. How could it be that the same man that was willing to part with his birthright, for just mere lentils, the same person who despised the birthright, now suddenly seems to come full circle and is literally complaining to his father that my brother wronged me. My brother hurt me. My brother took advantage of me. How are we to understand Esav's behavior? And the truth is, the last question, which is not as strong as the previous two, but still something very interesting to ponder, it's that the Torah explicitly says, Al kein kara shmo Edom, that Esav's name, and remember, Edom is not just Esav. Edom represents the totality of Esav's descendants. So then the third and final question is, why is Esav's entire character colored and forged by this one episode? So these are the three questions we're going to try to focus on tonight. Number one, how do we understand Esav's willingness to part with his birthright for such a meager barter of a bowl of lentils?
Question two, if he was willing to do it because he despised it, because it was so worthless, because it was so despicable to him, then how do we understand his behavior, number two, where he seems to regret having parted with the birthright, where he accuses his brother of taking advantage of him, when according to number one, he willingly parted with it? And question number three is, why is the totality of Esau's identity forged by this one episode with the bowl of lentils? So to answer this, the Torah says, Al Kain Krash Shemo Edo. So take a look at number three. So perhaps one of the most difficult, there might be extra sheets on some of the seats that are not being used. Okay, so if we take a look at number three, so the Torah says something amazing, which I think is probably one of the most, at least I find it personally distressing psukim in the Torah. Torah says number three, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid b'fiv. Now let's just translate it literally. Yitzchak loves Esav kitzayid b'fiv. Now kitzayid b'fiv, we'll just use a translation, because he fed him. Because Esav was a hunter. So Esav provided his father with fresh meals. If there's one thing that Esav did, you know, it's interesting. The Medrash brings down that the reason Amalek, right? Amalek, which is our nemesis, is our arch rival. Remember, Amalek, as the Rambam points out, doesn't refer to a particular actual nation, but Amalek refers to people who really just are the arch enemies of the Jewish people, spiritual enemies of the Jewish people. They are fueled by Esav Zechus of Kibud Avayim, or at least Kibud Av. That Esav was exceptionally meticulous in the way that he honored his father. So the Torah says that every single day, he made sure that his elderly father was fed. Vayav, and therefore, Yitzchak loved him. The Rivka oheves es Yaakov. And Rivka loved Yaakov. So the basic pshat seems to be that the parents are playing favorites. Yitzchak loves Esav. Yerivka loves Yaakov, and of course, again, that is the Parshat Pshat, and of course, this sets the stage for the disastrous playing favorites in the next generation, right? When Yaakov himself plays favorites with Yosef, ultimately alienating Yosef from his brothers, the Gemara exclusively says, "Bishvil chamisha zehuvim shehosif Yaakov liYosef," because the extra $10 that Yaakov spent on Yosef's coat, above and beyond what he spent on the brothers, Gilgal hadavar v'yardu avseil Mitzrayim, the matter escalated, and we ended up being enslaved in Egypt. So the Gemara actually puts the responsibility of Egyptian enslavement on the shoulders of Yaakov for having favored one of his children over the others. So here we seem to see this precedent set by Yitzchak and Rivka. So Rashi points out that number four, Rashi says, Befiv, Kitargumo, Befiv Shal Yitzchak. Yeah, the Pasuk is saying just what it's saying, that Esav is feeding Yitzchak, he's physically, materially taking care of Yitzchak, and ultimately what he does is he essentially, it's going to sound a little bit strange, but he buys his father's affection. He's a doting son. Umidrasho b'fiv shal Esav shahayot sod oso umiramehu bidvarav. And the Medrash writes that kitzayid b'fiv means that Esav would habitually entrap Yaakov Avinu. You know, that he would portray... Esav would deceive his father by essentially asking him different questions that would seem to indicate that he was a monotheist, that he was clinging to the familial traditions, but he, correct, right, the Gemara says, right, you would ask him questions about how do you tithe certain products. My son is asking me how to tithe, so what is tzaddik? Tzaddik b'fiv. Okay. But there's something deeper unfolding over here. But to appreciate what's happening, specifically in the dynamic between Yitzchak and Esav, we have to take a little bit of a step back. I'm actually going to touch on something that we spoke about this past Shabbos morning. So take a look at number five. So the Torah says the following. The Yitzchak bo mi bo'o be'er lachai ro'i v'hu yoshev be'eretz ha'negev. So Yitzchak is sitting. Let's actually translate. Yitzchak comes from Be'er Lachai Ro'i, and it is situated in the Negev, in the south of Eretz Yisrael. Now, remember, this is last week's parsha. Just to give you the context. Sarah has died. Avraham has sent Eliezer to go find a wife for Yitzchak. As Eliezer is coming back with Rivka, successful Mishnah Ram Na'araim, the Torah tells us, where is Yitzchak in all of this? Yitzchak is in a place called Be'er Lachai Ro'i, that is in the south of Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh Lifnos Arev. Yitzchak goes out, we'll just translate Lasuach, whatever Lasuach means, we'll see in just a couple of moments. He goes to Lasuach in the field. It's evening time. Vayisa Enav, he lifts up his eyes. Vayar Vihine Gimalim Ba'im. He lifts up his eyes, and what does he see? He sees a caravan. A caravan of who? Eliezer. Right? This is the caravan that's carrying Eliezer and Rivka. So, what's interesting to note is the following. If you look at number 6, the Rashbam writes, Shahare Yitzchak Yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev Shesham Be'er Lachai Ro'i. So the Rashbam writes, you see, when you look at the pasuk, the first thing that comes to mind is what? What's the first question? What is he doing in Be'er Lachai Ro'i? What is he doing there? Remember, where's Avram Avinu? Where is the familial home at this time? Hebron, right? Avram Avinu purchased, remember, he purchased the burial plot for Suraim, and part of the reason why he chose Hebron was because Hebron was where he was currently living, right now. So the familial home is in Hebron, the center of Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak, for some reason, is in Be'er Lachai Ro'i, the south of Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi has his famous comment that why did Yitzchak go to the south? He went to actually bring Hagar. He went to bring Hagar back to his father because Avram desired to remarry Hagar. Different shear. But still, leading that aside, what is Yitzchak doing in the south of Eretz Yisrael? So the Rashbam says something amazing. Yitzchak left home. Yitzchak moved away from Hebron, and he has relocated himself, quote unquote, permanently to Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Now, here's something very important. Depending on how you understand what's going on with Yitzchak, will ultimately color how you read the pasuk. Because remember, if you go back to number 5 for just a moment, the Torah says, "V'Yitzchak bo mi'Be'er Lachai Ro'i." Yitzchak's coming from Be'er Lachai Ro'i. "V'hu yoshev be'eretz ha'negev." So, "V'hu" is referring to what? It depends, right? You could read it as referring to Be'er Lachai Ro'i. He's coming from Be'er Lachai Ro'i, and Be'er Lachai Ro'i, v'hu yoshev. You want to know where Be'er Lachai Ro'i is? V'hu yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev. It's in the south. The Rashbam says, no. V'hu yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev is for who's the who? Who is the who? Yitzchak Avinu. Says the Rashbam, Yitzchak Avinu has left the familial home in Hebron and has now resettled himself in Be'er Lachai Ro'i. The obvious question is, why? Now, amazingly enough, as we know, this is not the first time that we have heard of Be'er Lachai Ro'i. If you look at number 7, so remember the Torah says, this is after the episode, Sarah has convinced Avram Avinu to marry Hagar. After immediately marrying Hagar, Hagar becomes pregnant. Torah says, "Vatekel gevirta be'enah." Hagar begins to look down, to act almost in a condescending fashion towards Sarah. Sarah says, "This is not going to go. This is not going to happen here," and ultimately expels Hagar from the home. According to most Mefarshim, when Hagar is expelled, she's still pregnant. She's still pregnant. It's important for the story. So what happens? If we take a look at number 7, "Vayomer la malach Hashem." So she's standing there in the desert. She's standing there in the desert, not knowing where to go. Remember, Hagar came to Avram Avinu's family. She had to leave her family. Hagar was an Egyptian princess. She gave up. So, you know, Hagar, I often think, gets a bad rap, but Hagar must have been a very righteous woman in her own right, because she left a very comfortable and cushy life to go ahead and join the Abrahamic family. So now she's been kicked out of that house. What is she supposed to do? So she's standing in the desert. Vayomer la malach Hashem, hina chara. So the Malach says to her, "You are pregnant. V'yolada ben. You're going to have a son. V'karasa shemo Yishmael, ki shema Hashem elon yech. You're going to call him Yishmael because God heard your suffering. V'hu yet pera adam, yado bakol v'yad kol bo v'al penei kol echav ishkon. He's going to be great, but he's going to be mamish behema. V'atikra shema Hashem, hadover ata el kel roi, Ki amra hagam halo ra'isi achari ra'i. So she names this place, or she names the God that speaks to her, Kel ro'i, the seeing God. And therefore, in Pasuk Yedalad, al kin kara lebe'er, be'er lachai ro'i. Hagar named this place. Be'er lachai ro'i received its name from Hagar after her encounter with God. So apparently it all happened around the well. She calls it the well of Kel Be'er lachai ro'i, the well where I encountered the living God who sees all. The living God who sees all. So amazingly enough, where is Yitzchak? Yitzchak's not simply in the desert, right? He's not simply in the south. But Dafka, he's gone back to the place that was named by Hagar when she was expelled from Avram Avinu's home. Okay, that's piece one. The first time. What is he doing in Be'er Lachai Ro'i? So the Torah tells us, remember, what is he doing? Lasuach Basadeh. So listen to this. Number 8, says the Radak. Lasuach Basadeh Kilomar. Letayel bein hasichin. What does lasuach mean? Lasuach comes from the word, says the Radak, siach. Siach, sichin. Are what? Thorn bushes. We'll get to that. No, you're correct. We'll get to that in just a moment. But right now, letayel bein hasichin means, lasuach means that Yitzchak was walking around by the thorn bushes. Where have we seen sichin before? Where have we seen thorn bushes before? Okay, we saw it by Avram the Akedah. Good. By Yishmael. Take a look at number 9. Vayichlu hamayim min hachemes. So now this is time 2. This is episode 2, where Hagar was expelled from Avram Avinu's home. This time she's expelled with a child, with Avram, with Yishmael. So the Torah says they finish up all of their water. Yishmael is dying. Vatashlich es hayeled tachas achad hasichim. And what does Hagar do? Hagar says, remember, al ereb emos hayeled, I can't watch my child die. And so she puts him underneath a little bit of shade afforded by the thorn bushes, and she goes to sit, kimtacha vekeshes. She goes to sit a bow shot away, if that's a word. She goes to, so listen to this. So says the Radak, Yitzchak Avinu, you have to put all these pieces together. Yitzchak Avinu is back where? Be'er Lachai Ro'i, not just the south, right? Be'er Lachai Ro'i, the place that was named by Hagar when she was expelled from Avram Avinu's home. And what is he doing? Lasuach. He's walking around among the thorn bushes. The thorn bushes that what? Remember, Torah doesn't say this explicitly, but the Farsha pick up on it, that when Hagar was expelled the second time, where did she go? Be'er Lachai Ro'i, same place. Which means that the thorn bushes that she put her son Yishmael under to die were right there also. So Yitzchak Avinu is back in the place that Sarah went, that Hagar went to when she was expelled, walking around the thorn bushes that his half-brother Yishmael was placed under to die. But of course we know that Lasuach also has another connotation. Take a look at number 10. The Gemara says, Yitzchak tikein tfilas mincha. Yitzchak instituted mincha shene'emar vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basoda lifnos aref. That Yitzchak Avinu goes out to the field lasuach. And what? So what? Be'ein sicha ela tfila shene'emar tfila la'ani kiyatov v'lifnei Hashem yishboch sicho. So the Gemara understands that siach, a sicha, is a conversation. So vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basada lifnos arev means that Yitzchak Avinu is going out to pray and the evening, which means Yitzchak instituted mincha. Now I want to say something very important. We're all familiar with this idea that the Gemara says that Avram davened in the morning, Yitzchak davened in the afternoon, Yaakov davened in the evening. Now there's one very important nekuda to remember in this. It's not the pshat that Yitzchak just davened in the afternoon, or that Yaakov just davened in the evening. They were all building on each other. So Yitzchak davened in the morning like his father. Obviously, he didn't daven shachris, right? There was no shachris. But he connected, he prayed, he dialogued with God in the morning. But for whatever the reason, Yitzchak felt that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. So what did he do? He initiated another dialogue in the afternoon. So what's the question? What's the question? Think about that. What's the question? Why? Right. All right. I would say a little bit differently, Michael. But why? What? Meaning, Michael's right. Meaning, why? 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 What is it that compelled Yitzchak to dialogue again in the afternoon? You see, if we skip a generation, we understand Yaakov. We understand why Yaakov was davening at night. Why was Yaakov davening at night? Because he was in danger. Because he was on the run at night. Because Yaakov Avinu's entire existence could be categorized as one prolonged night. We understand it. Nighttime is a time of vulnerability. This categorizes, this embodies the essence of Yaakov's life. But why did Yitzchak feel compelled to go above and beyond the natural daven in the morning, but daven in the afternoon as well? So look at the Medrash number 11, and this is amazing. The Medrash writes, "Vayetze Yitzchak mechevron lasuach basad lifnos arev." Lehispalel lifnei boro. So siach. So the Medrash picks up on the definition of the Gemara that he goes out to daven in the after. He goes out to daven before God. Shahaya moro tamid alpanav, because Yitzchak was perpetually afraid. Afraid of what? Shelo yinaseyu. That what was Yitzchak davening about? Kadosh Baruch Hu, don't test me. Don't test me. What does that mean, don't test me? If we put all this together, I think an absolutely, it's a mind-blowing picture emerges. So let's put this all together. Yitzchak Avinu has left the familial home in Hebron, has relocated not just anywhere, but has gone to the south of Eretz Yisrael, not just the south, but has dafka chosen Be'er Lachai Ro'i, the location, I don't know what you would call Hagar's relationship to Yitzchak. What is she? It's not a stepmother. His father's wife. His father's wife, right? He goes to the place where his father's wife went when she was exiled from the home. Lasuach. And what is he doing there? He's walking between the thorn bushes where his own half-brother Yishmael was placed to die when his half-brother was expelled from the home of his father as well. And what is he doing as he's standing in the place that Hagar was expelled to, walking between the thorn bushes that his half-brother was left to die underneath? What is he doing? He's davening. And why is he davening? Because he's saying, Kodesh Baruch Hu, don't test me like you tested my father. I see what it means to be your ambassador in this world. I see what it means to be your go-to guy. I see what my father went through. I see what he went through with me at the Akedah. I see what he went through of having to exile Hagar. I saw the pain in his eyes when he had to tell his beloved son, Yishmael. You know, my friends, there's a very little known fact. Avram Avinu never turned his back on Yishmael. The Medrash brings down that he kept up his relationship with Yishmael every day. And you think it's an accident that he remarries Hagar after Sarah Imenu dies? Why does he do that? He's an old man. Because Avram Avinu, Hagar was his wife also. And Yishmael was his child also. And so Yitzchak sees the fact and he recognized the fact that his father, yes, was the chosen one. And he saw all of the incredible baggage that comes with being chosen. He saw the sacrifices. He saw the pain. And he's contemplating all of this. He saw how being chosen for Avram Avinu fractured and split his family. And Yitzchak Avinu says, the Medrash says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm not my father. I'm not my father. My father was able to answer the call of Lech Lecha. My father was able to make the hard sacrifices. My father did it without ever uttering a word. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm asking you not to put me in that same situation. I'm not my father. I can't rise to the occasion like my father did. Now, amazingly enough, so as he's lasuach basada, as he's pouring out his heart to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as he's davening this additional supplication to ask God not to make him essentially God's ambassador. Really what Yitzchak is saying is, I can't carry on where my father left off. I can't be the mamale makom. I can't be the next of the avos. And I'm asking you, God, not to put me in that situation. So as Yitzchak is davening, not to be tested, what happens? Look at number 12. as he's mamish davening. Torah says that what happens? Eliezer shows up. Eliezer shows up. And who does he show up with? He shows up with Rivka. And the Torah says in number 12, Vayisaper ha'eved liYitzchak, eis kol hadvorim asher asa. And amazingly enough, what does Eliezer do? Eliezer tells Yitzchak all of the things that happened. Now, what are all of the things that happened? Remember, the story is not just, wow, I found a really nice girl for you. Remember, the story is, Eliezer gets to the well, gets to Aram Naharaim, and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need to find a girl. I'm going to ask her to go ahead and have a drink. And if she offers me a drink, and my camels a drink. And amazingly enough, what happens? First girl to come to the well fits the bill. You know, it would have been miraculous if anybody would have measured up to that standard. But the fact that the first girl who comes happens to be Rivka, the daughter of Besuel, right? A grandniece of Avraham Avinu. So that's active divine intervention. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu manipulating nature in order to bring about a particular result. So Eliezer, now remember, Eliezer has no idea as to the struggles that Yitzchak is undergoing right now. But he tells all of this information to Yitzchak because, again, he's amazed by the miracles that he has seen unfold with his own eyes. And so at this moment, Yitzchak now realizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has arranged for him a wife with nothing less than direct divine intervention. Now, the klal gadol in life is that God does not give blessings for no reason. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do miracles for no reason. God doesn't need to flex his muscles. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me something in life, then what does that say? What does that tell me? That he believes in me to do something great. He believes me to, I mentioned this on Shabbos, this idea that we say in Moda Ani. I think we might have done in one of our tefillah shiurim, that when we wake up, we say, Moda Ani lefanecha melech ha'vekayom. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She'chazarta bi nishmasi, that you've given me back my soul. Rabba emunasecha. Great is your belief. You ever wonder, like, what does that mean? Great is your belief. Great is your belief in what? So the Maharal explains that what it means is, great is your belief in me, that if you have given me another day of life, it means that you believe that I can do something significant with it. Because the moment, God, that you don't think I have anything positive to contribute, then there is no reason for you to give me back my soul. There is no reason for you to allow me to open my eyes. Rabba emunasecha, how much you must believe in me if you have blessed me with another day of life. So Yitzchak hears this entire story from Eliezer. He hears the miraculous intervention. And he realizes that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu has delivered a Rivka to my doorstep, then what? He must have in something incredible in store for me. And here, Yitzchak Avinu comes to a major life crossroads. He has a choice. What's the choice? He could take his bride, and he can go back where? He can go back to Be'er Lachayroi. That's choice number one. Go back to Be'er Lachayroi. Settle down, nice house, white picket fence, right? He could live a very normal, quote-unquote, regular life. You know what? It's not for me, this whole Abrahamic thing, this whole monotheism thing, the whole converting humanity. I can't do it. He could go back and he'll be a very good man. He'll raise a good family. He'll go back to Be'er Lachayroi and just lead and resume a normal, almost like anonymous life. Or he could recognize that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done this incredible miracle for him, that it must mean that he has some absolute amazing destiny that is to be actualized. So what does Yitzchak choose? Take a look at number 13. So the Torah says, next pasuk, Vayivieha Yitzchak ha'ohela sara'imo. So amazingly enough, the Torah tells us, we know what his choice was. His choice was to embrace destiny. His choice was that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done this for me, it must mean that I have the ability to be something magnificent. He doesn't turn and run away to Be'er Lachayroi. He goes back home to Hebron so that his wife could fill the void left by the passing of Sarah and that he could take on the Abrahamic yoke of the next generation of leadership. But there's one thing that Yitzchak promises himself. I'll be an Av. I'll be the next of the Avos. I will be the Mamala Makum. I will be the one who fills the shoes of my father when he leaves this world. But there's one thing that I'm going to be absolutely adamant on, and that is, take a look at number 14. Take a look at number 14. Before we look at number 14, he says, I will never have Yishmael. I will never have Yishmael. Yitzchak Avinu promises himself that what he saw unfold in his father's home, he will never allow that to happen in his own. Now look at number 14. Writes the Shemen Atov something amazing. Yesh lomar od. Dimashine'emar. Listen to this insight. Dimashine'emar. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav. So when the Pasuk says that Yitzchak loved Esav, Kitzayid befiv, because he fed him, V'rifko heves es Yaakov. V'rifko loved Yaakov. So writes the Shemen Atov, Hainu mishnei tamim. Dahainu tam echad kitzayid befiv. See, yes, as we said before, the Pasuk Pshat, the simple understanding of the Pasuk is what? That why does Yitzchak love Esav? Because Esav takes care of him. But writes the Shemen Atov something amazing. V'atama sheni. You want to know the real reason why Yitzchak loved Esav? Ki Rivka oheves es Yaakov. The real reason why Yitzchak loved Esav is because he saw how much Rivka loved Yaakov. Now I want to point out, it's not the pshat that Rivka did not love Esav. A mother loves her children. But there's also no question that Rivka, the mother, with an incredible maternal intuition, saw that Abrahamic continuity was not going to come from Esav. It was going to come from Yaakov. And as such, there's no question that she probably nurtured Yaakov more for that role as well. So right, the Shemen Atav, you want to understand what the Torah is telling us? Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav ki tzayid befit. But what do you think? What do you think? That Yitzchak Avinu could be bought? That you give him a T-bone, you give him a steak, and suddenly that's it, you're his favorite child? That's all it takes to be the favorite of Yitzchak? No. Verifko heves es Yaakov. That what did Yitzchak Avinu see unfolding in his house? He saw happening in his home, in his marriage, in his family, what happened in his father's family. Because he also, and remember Yitzchak more than Yitzchak was the beloved son. Yitzchak was the chosen child. See, he knew what it meant to be put on a pedestal. And he sees his wife doing that with the younger son. So Yitzchak Avinu promises himself, the more that Rivka loves Yaakov, I have to love Esav just as much or more in order to ensure that he is not rejected from the fold of the family. And if you take a look at number 415, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditchev writes so beautifully. He says, "Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid befiv." Rabbi Levi Yitzchak says here a very beautiful insight. He says, "Perush kitzadik hatanuk shelo me'alios nitzotzos." A tzaddik, what makes a tzaddik a tzaddik? A tzaddik is someone who is able to extract kedusha, able to extract or actualize holiness in every situation. Shema'ala ha'nitzotos asher nitzodu beklipos. Because very often holiness is not obvious. Very often holiness is covered by layers of impurity. It's the job of the tzaddik to remove the klipos, to remove the outer shells, and allow the holiness to burst forth. U'bimahu ma'ala osam. And how does the tzaddik unleash the holiness that is embedded everywhere in this world? B'torah u'betfila shelo shu b'peh. The tzaddik has the amazing ability to transform things just with his mouth, with his ability of prayer, with his power of learning, and the truth is, most simply, with the power of a kind word. Sometimes just with a kind word, with interacting with people in a certain way, you bring out their kiddusha. So Kotor Levi Yitzchak says, V'zahu kitzayit befiv, befiv shelo motzi hanitzotzos, v'zahu vayehav Yitzchak es Esav, ki b'shorish Esav hayu nitzotzos asher nitzodu sham. D'haynu nishmas shmai v'avkai v'nishtari meir. So it says Rabbi Yitzchak so beautifully. You know how you read the Pasuk? Vayehav Yitzchak as Esav ki tzayid b'fiv. That Yitzchak loved Esav, you know why? Ki tzayid. Because he saw that there was so much holiness trapped within Esav. It just had to be brought out. It just had to be actualized. And how could he do that? Befiv, with his mouth. By continuing to talk with his child. By nurturing his child. By learning, by doing whatever a parent needs to do to actualize the innate, inherent holiness. It's something also very interesting. That if you look at the Pasuk, when it says, I'll just read it to you. In number 3, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid befiv. Rivka heves es Yaakov. The tenses are different. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav is what? is what? Past tense. Yitzchak loved Esav, v'rifka or heves es Yaakov. And what? Present. My grandfather, Zichrono Livracha, you know what the pshat in that is? He says that, you know what, how do you love an Esav? I mean, really, how do you love an Esav? Esav, there are many words you could use to describe Esav. Lovable is not one of them. Lovable is not one of them. So how do you love an Esav? You know how you love an Esav? By drawing on your past memories. You know, we Esav gets a bad rap because we often think that he's born with this ruddy complexion. So mamish, he was a Rasha from the time that he emerged from the womb. It's not true. It's not true. Esav was a baby just like every other baby. And I'm sure that his parents had incredible nachas when he took his first step. And they stayed up with him in his sleepless nights. And they dealt with him just like any other parent deals with their children. Vayehav Yitzchak is Esav, his past tense. That Yitzchak Avinu remembers, I remember Esav. He was a good boy. He was a sweet child. And now it's not so great. You know what? I'll reflect more on what he was, more than focus on what he is. And by focusing on what he was, it also gives me hope that the same way that he was good, that he was beautiful, that he was wonderful in the past, so what? Maybe he'll be able to regain some of that life purity as well. So here's something amazing. So as much as Yitzchak Avinu has agreed to embrace his destiny, he doesn't go back to Be'er Lachayroi. He goes back to Hebron. Rivka goes into the tent of Sarimenu. Yitzchak goes into the tent of Avram Avinu. But Yitzchak walks into that tent, pledging to himself, I will not have a Yishmael. I will not have a Yishmael. I will never ask a child to leave my home, and both of my children will continue perpetuating my legacy. And so essentially, what does Yitzchak do? Yitzchak creates for himself a fictional reality. That Yitzchak Avinu, you know, the amazing part about the mind is we can convince ourselves that certain things are true. And if you say it enough over and over and over again, amazingly enough, what happens? It's true. It's true. Not only is it true, you can actually begin to prove why it's true. And even if it's attacked, you actually begin to believe your own self-deception. Yitzchak Avinu from the beginning already made a decision that Esav will not be a Yishmael. And therefore, he creates a reality in which Esav is a certain way in order that he doesn't even have to contemplate the fact that maybe Esav is not that way. Past tense. I'll just keep on remembering him when he was a little baby. He was so good, so beautiful, so wonderful then. He must have some Kiddusha buried in there. And Yitzchak Avinu refuses to contemplate or to take a real hard look at who and what his son has become. And now we understand how the rest of the parsha plays out. Take a look at number 16. Remember, one of the most difficult episodes in the parsha, well, there are a number of difficult episodes, but one of the grueling episodes that we have in the parsha is how Rivka puts Yaakov up to this act of deception. Right? Rivka is the wife. Rivka is the, remember, in the Avos Imos model, we spoke about this morning in the witch here, we have synergistic partnerships. We have husbands and wives working together. We have them working hand in hand to advance a common goal. And here, Rivka Imenu is literally working around Yitzchak. So what's the pshat? So look at Rav Hirsch number 16. He says something amazing. So when the Torah introduces the section, Yitzchak calls in Esav and he says to Esav, Hineinu zakanti. I've become very old. It's now the time that I want to give you a bracha. So writes Rav Hirsch, in the little word na, Hineinu zakanti, see after all, I am already old. It is made clear that he had already long had the intention to bestow such a blessing. So Hineinu zakanti means, Rav Hirsch understands it, it's Yitzchak Avinu saying, listen, I've wanted to give this bracha for such a long time, but I delayed it, but now I'm old, I'm nervous how much life I have in front of me, and therefore now I really have to give the blessing. But so he wanted to give it, but had been dissuaded, had yielded to remonstration. Rebecca, Rivka, had probably constantly argued with him. You see, we don't see this in the text, but Rav Hirsch makes the assumption that during all of these years, Rivka was saying to her beloved Yitzchak, Yitzchak, what was she saying to him? I love you. I love you. But you missed the boat on this one. Right? Esav is not what you think he is. He's just not what you think he is. I know you hold him out to be some type of tzaddik nister, right? He's got all of that kedusha and all the klipos all hidden deep inside. Well, maybe it's so deep that the rest of us can't see it, but I'm telling you that you have misjudged him. So she constantly argued with him, trying to convince him of the truth, and had then persuaded him. Anyway, leave it for a time. You are not so old yet. There's still plenty of time, and had hoped in the meantime that he would be undeceived. So what does Rivka do? She can't convince him that Esav is not going to perpetuate the legacy. So what does she do? If you can't convince him, at least delay it. Well, you're not so old, you'll have plenty of time, hoping that in the interim, Esav's true colors would become apparent to Yitzchak. But she had not succeeded. And what now? And now what was she to do? What could she have wanted with this plan? Nothing but to bring home to him, to convince him at Hamanim, that and how easily he could be deceived. If a Jacob, an Ishtam, can so easily masquerade as a Gibor Tzayid, how much more easily can Esav masquerade as an Ishtam to him? And in this, Yitzchak's undeception, through Yaakov's deception, Rivka succeeded perfectly. So this is a mind-blowing refersh. So refersh explains that Rivka wasn't actually trying to get Yaakov the blessings, because the truth is, the beautiful part about brachos is they come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you can't trick someone into blessing you. The whole point that Rivka was trying to show Yitzchak is, you can be deceived, and you've deceived yourself. Look at the proof. Yaakov, your little Tmimistic son, right, puts on some furs and suddenly you think he's Esav. And he brings you a nice meal and you think he's Esav. You give him the brachos. So now do you understand, my beloved husband, when I was telling you that all of these years, the boy who you thought was Esav was not really Esav. And amazingly enough, what happens, if you skip down a few lines, what happens? And as soon as Isaac realized the trick that had been played upon him, Vayecharad charada gedola ad ma'ot. What happens? The reality that Yitzchak Avinu had constructed for himself now comes crashing down. Because the amazing part about deceptive or alternate realities is there comes a point in time where you have to face the fact that you made it up. Because if it's not MS, if it's not the truth, ultimately, it can't stand indefinitely. Some alternate realities last longer, some last shorter, but they all come to an end at some point in time. Rivka's entire purpose was just to bring home to Yitzchak. I know it's going to be a painful realization, but you must accept the fact that you have built in your desire not to have another Yishmael, you have created for yourself a fictitious Esav. You have created for yourself a Bechor who is not really what you think it is. Everybody thinks that it was Esav trying to fool Yitzchak. And the reality is, Esav didn't have to fool Yitzchak at all. Because Yitzchak was so desperate to believe that Esav was good, that all Esav had to do was simply mask his negative behaviors from his father's sight. And it was almost like, don't ask, whatever, we'll make the assumption. So desperate was he not to have a Yishmael, that he creates this fictitious reality. And after the whole masquerade, and after the whole act of deception, what's the take-home message for Yitzchak Avinu? I recognize now that my alternate reality was false, that Esav is really who he is, that Yaakov is really who he is, and I guess at the end of the day, I will have the Yishmael just like my father. And when that occurs, Bayecharad Yitzchak Charada Gidola Ad Ma'od. Because the truth is, when you live life with a certain construct of reality, and you put all of your energy into upholding that construct, and then it comes tumbling down, it calls into question your entire identity. Suddenly everything you believed, everything, and remember, when you have a set of beliefs, you base so many things, it's like a tower. Everything comes down. So for Yitzchak Avinu, when he finds out that his fictitious reality of Esav was truly fictitious, it calls his entire existence into question. And in those moments where you have to doubt your entire existence, Charada Gedola. It's an overwhelming fear. And by the way, interesting enough, what does Rashi comment on that pasuk? Charada Gedola, if you remember Rashi says, Ra'a Pischo Shel Gehenim, Pasuach mitachtov. Literally, he saw the pits of hell open up beneath him. Because there is no greater Gehenna in life than not knowing what your life is all about. There's no greater Gehenna than not knowing what's true and what's not true. So now that the whole Esav facade has been dispelled, Yitzchak Avinu's entire existence is called into question. Now we understand the dynamic by Esav. What Yitzchak Avinu went through is the same exact dynamic that plays out with Esav. Remember, let's go back. Let's go back about 45 minutes. So what happened 45 minutes ago? So we discussed three basic questions. Number one, why is it that Esav is willing to part with his bechorah? Why is he willing to part with the birthright for just simply a bowl of lentils? Number two, if it's so meaningless to him, vayivez, then what? Then why does he cry, such a bitter cry, when all Yaakov does is act upon the right that he justly bought from Esav? What's happening over here? Let's take a look at number 17. There's an amazing Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi writes, this is 17 Aleph, Esav b'Medrash. Medrash writes, Apasuk vayozev Yaakov nezid. Amar lo Esav, mativo sha'osa tavshio. So the Medrash writes, Esav comes back from the field, he sees Yaakov cooking the lentils, he says, Yaakov, why are you cooking lentils? Amar le, shemes osa zokin. The old man, that's not used like in a pejorative sense, that was actually a term of endearment, a term of deference. The elder, Avram, has died. That's what Yitzchak tells Esav, our grandfather has died. Amar le af ba'osa zokin pagamidas hadin les din v'les dayim. So Esav says something amazing. He says, oh, if Avram could die, then there's no justice and there's no judge. There's no justice and there's no judge. Almost like what Esav is saying is, if even an Avram Avinu could encounter death, then there must be no order in this world. There's no God, there's no justice, everything is random. And now remember, how old is Avram Avinu when he dies? No, it's right, he's 175 years old. So ask the Beis Halevi, 17 bays. The Eish Lahavin. Madua Pakar Esav Az, the Chihaya Savar Bedato Sha Avram Avinu Yichya Li Olam. So he's basically, what is this thing? You know, Chas HaSholem, you hear about somebody who dies young. So thoughts like that sometimes come to mind. That, what kind of world is this? That where's the justice? Where's the order? Where's the Seder? It's such a tragic gap. It says the Beis Halevi, yes. Is it sad that Avram Avinu died? Of course it's sad. Is it tragic? It's tragic? It's not tragic. He lived until 175 years old. He left behind the family. He lived a good and meaningful life. Sad, yes. Tragic, no. So how do you understand Esav's reaction to the death of Avram Avinu? Look what the Beis Halevi writes. 17 Gimel. Rak yeshlomar hakavona debein habisarim amr liyakodesh baruch hu ki ger yehezar acha be'eretz lo lohem va'avadum vi'inu osam. So, going back to Parashas Lech Lecha, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the Bris Ben Avisarim, the covenant, where God makes His first covenant with Avram Avinu, so He tells Avram Avinu the following, that your children will be a stranger in a land that's not theirs, v'avdu v'inu osam, and they'll be afflicted for 400 years. V'isav ha-medrash rabba, the Avram shal, afani b'shibut, amr le'lo, ela va'ata tavo ela v'secha b'shalom. Hari d'chol zman shayu Avram Avinu kayyum, hayu betuchim devada lo yaschil ha-shibut, v'rak b'yom shemes bo higiyah, So listen to what the Medrash says. That's when God tells Avram Avinu that your children are going to be enslaved, so Avram Avinu asks a very simple question. Am I also going to be enslaved? Is that going to happen to me? And God responds to Avram, no. No. You will die peacefully. So says the Beis Halevi, which then tells us what? That as long as Avram Avinu lived, the threat of enslavement, the threat of persecution, the threat of suffering, was not upon the family. But the moment that Avram Avinu dies, then what? The entire family becomes vulnerable. Now, there's no telling what's going to happen at any given time. Omishum hachi, nisyore Esav, shelo yishtabed me'ata. Now we understand Esav's reaction. Because now that Yaakov told Esav that Avram is dead, what's going through Esav's mind is the shibud, is the persecution. Is the enslavement going to start now? Ukvar yada shelo al kol zaro shel Avram hayu agzer migolos. Rak al miktas bonav ukmo shamar akasov ki bi Yitzchak ikar lechazar v'darshu chazal bi Yitzchak v'lo kol Yitzchak. So furthermore, what does Esav know? That in the Abrahamic family, not everybody continues the Masorah. Not everybody continues the tradition. I mean, not everybody is affected by all the covenants that God made with Avram. Just like Avram had two sons. One perpetuated the legacy and one did not. So too, V'yitzchak ha'yulu shnei banim, v'rak al echad chalachiyuv, v'rak echad nikra zera Avram, v'humi sheyilech bidrachov shal Avram v'dato, hua nikra zero, v'alav hu dechalashibun, ava misha in a holy bidrachov, inu nikra zera kol. So here's what Esav knows. Avram dies, vulnerability has set in. The possibility for persecution, the possibility for enslavement. But we also know that that gezira, that decree, is not going to devolve on all of the descendants of Avram, but it's following a very specific familial line. That just like it was Avram to Yitzchak, Yitzchak has two sons, one son will continue the line, and one son will not. Will be great in his honor, but one son will not. So watch this. Letter Dalet, 17 Dalet. Umishum hachi, kisheshama, shemes Avram, Nischakim Esav Lesalek Me'atzmo Hachov Halaz La'azov Darko Shel Avram Umishum Hachim Yir Asom In Hashibot Pakar Va'amar Les Din Ve'les Dayon V'hotzi Es Atzmo Min Haklal V'lihios Ben Chor Me'achov Halaz. So watch this, says this is so profound. So when Esav walks into the house and he sees Yaakov cooking the lentils, and Yaakov says, the Zaken, grandfather, has died. What's happening in Esav said? He knows now, if Avram's dead, family's vulnerable. Family's vulnerable. But it's not the whole family. It's only whoever continues the Abrahamic line. So now, Esav doesn't want any piece of this. Why? Because he doesn't want the burden. He doesn't want the burden. But what is Esav going to say? What is Esav going to say? I don't want it. What is Esav going to say? I don't believe in it. I don't want the responsibility. I want the life, freedom from sons. He's not going to say that. Why is he going to say that? Why is he going to say that? Because it's not comfortable to say that. It's not comfortable to say that. Because if I say that, then what? It means that I'm less of a mensch. It means that I'm not as strong as my brother. It means that I'm not as strong as my grandfather. So I'm not going to chas v'shalom say that I can't handle the system. Instead, you know what I'm going to say? The system is broken. There is no say. It's not me. It's not me walking away. It's the system that has abandoned me. A God who could let my 175-year-old grandfather die is not a God that I want to be part of. Really? Really? He's 175 years old. He had a good life. What did you expect? So what is Esav Levi saying? What is Esav doing? Esav is creating a fictional reality to justify his life decisions. Esav wants to walk away, but he doesn't have the courage to go ahead and say, I'm walking away. Because remember, klal gadol in life is what? People are never wrong. People are never wrong. It doesn't matter who they are. People are never wrong. I'm always right. You just don't understand me. Right? You don't understand my perspective. You don't understand where I'm coming from. But we're never wrong. We always have a way of justifying, creating realities that somehow will give us the license to do the things we do. So Esav needs an out. Esav needs to walk away because he does not want to bear the responsibility of familial vulnerability. So what does he say? Less din, v'less dayan. If grandfather died, there is no God. Well, if there is no God, then what? Then what? Then there's nothing to accept. Then there's nothing to buy into because there's no longer a system. So I have not walked away from the system. The system, God, has forsaken me. Take a look at letter Hey. Ubaze yumtak hetiv. Mashera isi besefer zerabarach. Ahadu amar lo Yaakov michra kemes bechoras chali. That's why again, so now the base lady goes on to say that Yitzchak, that Yaakov plays this up. And Yaakov Avinu highlights the vulnerability and says to Esav, we're willing to, okay, but the point over here is that at the end of the day, what's happening over here at the beginning of the parasha is that again, Esav understands the responsibility now that devolves upon him specifically as a Bechor. He doesn't want it. He doesn't want it. But he doesn't have the courage to say, I don't want it. Instead, it creates this fictional reality that gives him the right to walk away. But it's not him turning his back on God. I'm walking away because God has turned his back on me. And now we understand. So amazingly enough, there's an incredible symmetry between the actions of the father and the actions of the son. Yitzchak creates his own fictional reality because Yitzchak has already decided in his mind that he is not having a Yishmael. There will not be a Yishmael. Even if he's Yishmael, he's not going to be Yishmael. And so Yitzchak Avinu builds up Esav in his way. What happens with Yitzchak, as happens with all fictional realities, they come crumbling down. They come crumbling down. At that moment, when true reality is exposed, Vayecharad Yitzchak Charada Gedola. Same exact thing happens with Esav. He builds his fictional reality. There's no God. Less than below that, there's no system, and that gives him an out. But amazingly enough, what happens? When it comes time to get the blessings from his father, at the end of the day, when he sees that his father is standing on death's threshold, that his father is looking to give over the Mesorah, so even Esav is drawn to it. And at that moment, when he realizes that he has forfeited his spiritual inheritance, what does he do? Vayitzak tsa'aka gedola umara. At the moment when he realized that his brother really took it, at the moment that he realized that he really lost it, not because God turned his back on Esav, but because Esav turned his back on God, he is filled with incredible remorse. Remorse for something he cannot reverse. Remorse for something he cannot fix. And that's the tsa'aka gedola umara ad mo'od. That is this incredible, almost what Rav Soloveitchik called a primordial cry. A cry that mamish comes from the depths of man. It's a cry that comes about when you recognize that your fictitious reality has just come crumbling down and you are forced to face the realities of life as they truly are. Now, amazingly enough, now we also understand why he's called Edom. Because what does Esav do with the lentils? Remember how Esav sets off the whole transaction? Remember, he comes into the house. He says to Yaakov, what you got over there? Yaakov says, it's lentils. Halitini na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Give me some of the lentils. And what's, remember the lashon that Esav uses? The lashon was, Vayomer Yaakov, give me your birthright. And what does he say? Hine anochi holeich lamos. I'm going to die. Now, let me ask you. If Yaakov saw that his brother was going to die, do you think he would have started handling with him? I mean, I know he's Jewish, but I mean, we have our limits. Do you think he would have started, if he sees that literally his brother is about to die, he's going to start talking about the birthright? No. Again, when did Esav begin to create his fictitious reality? Right there. He creates a decision. He says, oh, I don't have a choice. I have to give up my birthright. Because if I don't give up my birthright, then what? Then I'm going to die. Well, if I have no choice, then I have no choice. Al kein kara shemo Edom. Therefore, forever, Esav and his descendants are known as Edom because those lentils, the willingness to go ahead and create a fictitious reality that you could walk away from your destiny, that entire process, again, of creating fictitious realities that give you an out from seizing your destiny, are embodied by that bowl of lentils. And that's why for all generations to come, Esav and all of his descendants are simply known as Edom. And obviously, there's an incredible life lesson that emerges for us as well. First of all, just an amazing study in psychology that even good people create alternate realities in an effort to justify certain things in their lives. Yitzchak does it because he refuses to have Yishmael. Esav does it because he wants an out from familial responsibility. But the truth is, it's ma'asim b'chol yom that people do this. That in reality, we all create realities for ourselves. How often does it happen that we convince ourselves that we can't do certain things? I can't, I'd love to do A, I can't do it. I'd love to be that kind of person, it's just not in my nature. I'd love to accomplish a particular thing, but here are all the reasons that I can't. But you know what the amazing part is? People go through life telling themselves all of the reasons they can't do, they can't be, they can't achieve, they can't accomplish. And after you tell yourself that for a while, that becomes your defining reality. But the amazing mussar we see is, as much as that alternate or fictional reality gives us an out, there comes a point in time where fictional reality comes crashing down. There comes a point in time where the made-up realities simply dissipate and actual reality sets in. And those moments are moments of charada gedola. Those moments when we see what life could have been instead of what life actually is. The moments that we see the people that we could have grown into had we not made excuses are they're heartrending. They're tso'ako gidolo umara. They are almost sufferable moments. And part of the musa we take from this parsha, from Yitzchak Avinu, from even Esav Harasha, is to really take a long, hard look at the lives we lead, to look at the things that we call reality, and to ask ourselves the fundamental question: are the realities in which we exist, the constructs in which we exist, true absolute realities, or are they self-imposed realities? And if they're self-imposed realities, are we willing to deconstruct them before life deconstructs them for us? All right, we'll stop over here. Yes.